Getting that message out. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Garrett. Tariq earlier mentioned that many of these students have not had an opportunity to speak to their parents. It's nearly been 3 months since they've been detained, and it's only been last week that some of them have been able to speak to some of their relatives. I also mentioned the SIAC hearing, which will take place probably on the 27th. Some of the parents want to come here to the UK. We're trying to organize it for them. They will have all kind of impediments like visas and so on to actually get here to the UK. We're also trying to raise money so that we are able to assist them to be able to come here to the UK for that particular hearing. There will be a bag going round, and I would urge you to donate generously to the campaign so that we might be able to financially assist some of them with the expensive airfares. Secondly, campaigns also need money to run. I mean, we've incurred a significant amount of cost. Most of it has actually been paid out by individuals who have actually been involved in the campaign. So please dig deep and give as much as you can. Our next speaker is Dorothy Wright. Dorothy is from the University College Union. She is active here in the London region. I'm delighted to say that the UCU were one of the very first unions to pass a comprehensive resolution supporting the campaign and supporting the students as well. Their support has opened significant avenues, giving potential for other academics to get involved in the campaign and lend support to the students as well. Dorothy, let me just bring this over.
Thank you. I'm Dorothy Wright, activist for UCU at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine just across the street, and the London Region UCU Committee, and a member of the National UCU Academic Related Staff Committee. I've been asked to speak about UCU's support for the Northwest 10 and our campaign opposing the new points-based immigration policy in general as it applies in higher and further education. And can I just say, I'm incredibly honored to be here. Thank you. At UCU's Congress at the end of May, we passed an emergency motion condemning the treatment of the Northwest 10. First, I want to read a statement to this meeting and this campaign from Martin Ralph, the originator of that motion, and hence UCU's support for this campaign. To the Justice for the Northwest 10, I am writing to express our solidarity with the J4NW10 campaign. I am secretary of the Liverpool Branch University and Colleges Union. Our branch moved an emergency motion at the UCU Congress in May this year that was overwhelmingly supported by the Congress. UCU Congress stated that Congress agrees to 1. Demand the 10 students are released immediately and allowed to complete their education. 2. Support the Justice for Northwest 10 campaign. And 3. Write to the Home Secretary demanding the deportation is stopped and that they are released. Following this, the Liverpool TUC agreed the same motion with the additional point to invite a speaker from the Justice for the Northwest 10 campaign to the 16th of July Liverpool TUC meeting. It seems that 6 or 7 of the students held were seized in Liverpool and are from John Moores and Hope Universities and Kaplan, which is a private multinational education provider that is based within Liverpool University and provides one-year foundation courses. While Pakistani students are raided and seized, the vultures of the multinationals are raiding and trying to seize at least parts of public education. Justice for the Northwest 10 campaign is being raised with representatives of Unite, Unison, and the NUS in Liverpool, and generally there is a feeling of shock and anger against what has happened. No doubt many more union branches, regions, and conferences will support the campaign and demand for the release of the students if union members put this type of motion. As trade unionists, we have the international responsibility to defend those who are suffering racist attacks in the name of the war on terror, and these events show the collapse of civil rights in this country. I wish you every success with your meeting and campaign. Martin Ralph. Excuse me. Following the motion that Martin mentioned, which, if memory serves me correctly, we passed unanimously, Sally Hunt, the General Secretary of UCU, has written to the Home Secretary, and I'll read a brief excerpt from her letter, 23rd June 2009. Dear Alan, UCU calls on you to stop the deportation of these students and release them immediately. We believe this should be done not just because of the unjust treatment they are suffering, not just because these actions are clearly fueling Islamophobia, but also because, yet again, this is another example of an attack on all our civil liberties. I have to say, UCU is very aware of the Preventing Violent Extremism agenda on campus, and as I have stated many times before, we are resolutely opposed to violent extremism. Over the last few years, the government has expended a great deal of time and money into developing guidelines for tackling violent extremism on campus. It seems, again, as in the case of Hicham Yeza at Nottingham, the existence of the government's guidelines are neither here nor there, as the police can storm in and make arrests with impunity. I urge you again to stop the deportations and release the students. Yours sincerely, Sally Hunt, General Secretary. I want to talk a bit more about the wider issues of this campaign and the government's policies for the University and College Union. Even before the students were arrested, there was a widespread opposition developing in the UCU against the new points-based immigration system that the government has been developing in the past few years. This is now a major area of campaigning for UCU, as you will see in the next several months. A bit about UCU's points-based immigration campaign. A summary of its impact on education. Educational institutions must now be licensed by the Home Office to take foreign students and must meet reporting requirements to the Home Office on these students, which will involve some sort of monitoring by people at the host institution. If any key appointments these students are due to make are missed, the student must be reported by staff at that institution to the Home Office. Imagine only what the Home Office will do. The students will have to carry biometric ID cards. Academic and related staff, who are UCU members, and other support staff, Unison and other union members, will be expected to add to their duties that of extension to the border agency by reporting those students who miss these appointments. How this will actually be implemented in the coming academic year is still not clear, so it's not even likely to be workable at this stage, even if we weren't opposed to it, which of course we are. It will fundamentally change the nature of relationship between educator and student. All levels of staff at universities and further education colleges, whether they teach the students directly or support them in other ways. Some institutions have determined they will impose the same conditions on all students to avoid the obvious accusation that monitoring is done in a racist fashion. This adds even more to the ridiculous workload. Okay, the implementation of the policy on students already this year. Visas have been harder to come by and taken much longer to obtain. In the early stages, 60%, much higher than normal, were refused, many on technicalities, nothing to do with the stated purpose of the policy, which is to weed out students who come here under allegedly false pretenses. There's an article about the current state of play in this week's Times Higher Education on the impact of this policy. The consequence to higher and further education institutions will be less successful recruitment of overseas students, a drop in income, possible closure of courses, and a loss of prestige to the institution, not to mention the loss of any human interaction between students and educators. At my institution, the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, 40% of our students come from foreign countries and will be subjected to these policies. Many other institutions have equally high numbers. These students make a significant economic contribution to their institutions. They make tremendous contributions in so many other ways. The government appears only to see the economic ones and says we should recruit more of them because they pay higher fees, yet is now making it harder for us to do so in the middle of a recession, and is destroying the country's credibility as an educational destination once those students have been recruited here by the treatment of the Northwest 10 and others. Okay, what is UCU doing and done nationally at the grassroots level and at the grassroots level on this issue? First, we had an exploratory meeting last autumn where a number of activists started discussing the policy. We had a briefing paper from the union in February. In March, this issue was included as one of the three main priorities for the academic-related staff committee in the UCU in the upcoming year, as the academic-related staff include admin and IT staff like myself, who will in all likelihood be on the sharp end of the managing the schemes to monitor students. We had a full seminar in April, including a speaker from the University's UK, talking about their own input into modifying the policy. This is actually something that university managements and the union are not completely on opposite sides over, although managements seem unwilling to admit that in public. But UUK has lobbied the government and made some changes to how this policy will be implemented. There were four motions in addition to the support for the Northwest 10 passed at Congress condemning the policies as discriminatory attacks on civil liberties and damaging to these institutions. This is the activities agreed from these motions include pledging to lobby all bodies, relevant bodies in the country, to campaign jointly against the policy with all other unions and bodies to get the policy repealed, to launch a non-compliance campaign with such policing of our students, and pledging support to any member who refuses to implement the process. To write to all principals and vice chancellors, encouraging them to oppose this xenophobic policy, to urge the TUC to condemn the policy and join the campaign, and to produce campaigning materials for all branches. This past month in June, a meeting called by the London region of UCU that is in the process of setting up a cross-union blog met. We have a blog at www.wearenotborderagents.wordpress.com and a group on www.unionbook.org, also under the name We Are Not Border Agents. We also have an email address, which if you can't remember all that, just remember this one, wearenotborderagents@gmail.com. Please email that if you wish to join, if you wish to be reminded of the blog and the group, and we will send you more details. I'm currently in the process with another member of setting all these things up. They're not quite finished yet, but we will certainly be including anything from the Justice for the Northwest 10 campaign on our blog and in our group. Additionally, the Bloomsbury London Living Wage campaign, which is another cross-union organization, and its support of the SOAS cleaners who were raided and some of them deported within 2 days with no access to any union or legal assistance. This is just another impact of the government's immigration policies. I also want to tell you a brief story about another case I know about that's similar but different to the Northwest 10, some of the things that happen out of sight, and it's probably why this issue has resonated so much with me and why I've gotten involved in it. In my job as an IT manager, each year I employ a placement student for a year from one of London's universities known for their widening participation agenda and large numbers of foreign students. A few years ago, I had an excellent Muslim Sri Lankan student for a year. At the end of that year, he returned to the University of East London and successfully completed his degree. Within a year, he had a job in IT and successfully applied for a visa to remain in the UK and take up his job. That was last July. 4 months later, finally able to afford to, he went home to Sri Lanka for a visit. On arriving there, he was told with no prior warning that his visa had been revoked and he could not return to this country, leaving his job, his flat, his friends, everything. No reason was given. He's remained in Sri Lanka since, trying to overturn this and clear his name and return to the UK. He was eventually told that he was a risk to the UK under counter-terrorism measures. But of course, he wasn't given any evidence. He's now appealing this, but it must go through SIAC, which is something I'd never heard about until he started calling me and asking for my help. At SIAC, you and your solicitor are not provided with the evidence against you, as Gareth has already said. His appeal date is in October, and I have already volunteered to go to provide a character reference on his behalf, which is all I can actually do. After I agreed yesterday to give this talk, I discovered coincidentally that his solicitor, who I've been previously in contact with, is a member of Gareth Pierce's firm, so I'm pleased to know he's in very good hands. Another thing that's happened in my life that I was talking to Rezum from Nottingham about before this, and I'm sorry I'm throwing it in at last minute and lengthening my speech a bit. My family moved from Canada to the US in 1965. We were held up for 3 months because my father couldn't get a visa. They wouldn't tell him why. My father was a medical physicist. He'd been a physics lecturer at Auckland University in the past. He had no idea what the government of the U.S. held against him. They kept saying, there's something you're not telling us. This was 1965. Imagine how much worse it is now. Turns out, eventually, the institution he was going to work for really wanted him and pulled some strings. And what was against him? He'd given a talk at the request of an NGO in Auckland in his capacity as a physicist about what would happen if a 20-megaton nuclear bomb or some such was detonated over Auckland in his professional capacity. My father was left-wing but not remotely politically active. It never occurred to him this was something that anybody would hold against him. Eventually, we got to the U.S. Anyway, I just mentioned that because my father's degrees came from Nottingham, and I was talking to Rezwan about this earlier. Okay, the impact of these policies and the actions of the government, police, and border agency on a society and the world should be clear. An increase in Islamophobia and other forms of racism. Recently, one friend made a comment to me in a conversation about my former student, Aslam, and my decision to speak up for him at SIAC. He said this was perhaps not wise of me and said, there's probably no smoke without fire. So now we're seeing an increase in people who think they are not racist, slipping towards racist interpretations of events. We're in danger of becoming a society that sees escalating decreases in civil liberties, which is pretty much what Gareth said, and basic human rights, decreasing access to justice as these cases are tried in secrecy, and a society in which one is guilty until proven innocent and the ability to prove oneself innocent is removed, largely in a racist fashion. Another quote, this one from Martin Ogilvy, a PCS officer in Birmingham, in support of the Justice for the Northwest End campaign that came around UCU's activist mailing list recently, illustrates probably better what I mean. He said about the continuing assault on our civil, legal, and human rights in the name of the war on terror. While at present, Muslims bear the brunt of these attacks, the state will use repressive laws and policies against anyone when it suits them. The increasingly aggressive tactics used against G20 and the climate change protesters are recent examples. End of quote. We're seeing a degradation of a just society led by our government into one with a business focus, yet without much success at anything other than bailing these businesses out, into an isolationist society where they curtail funding for training for English for speakers of other languages, ESOL, and teaching foreign languages to those of us who speak only English. In what mindset does this make sense? UCU is working is strongly against the cuts in ESOL and language teaching, and the FE sector in particular has seen some major successes in the ESOL campaign. Also being cut are vast areas of adult education, again, courses that are of great use to immigrants to this country to help them either gain the skills or transfer their existing skills to help them in the UK economy, and thus to help the UK economy itself. All these cuts in a recession, and we're in a backdrop of fostering cultural and racial divides amongst groups of people that just make no sense. This government is contradictory at best, and who knows what at worst. It voices platitudes that should be real policy, widening participation, lifelong learning, and so on, and then puts in place policies, cuts to education funding and draconian racist immigration policies that further divide society and do not achieve the goals they were set up to allegedly created to achieve. How can we expect to improve the prospects for peace in the world if we do not all move amongst each other, communicate, learn, live, and work together? Migration and education both can and should foster understanding and affection. One of my previous placement students, now a permanent member of my team, I was lucky enough, he's a British national of Pakistani descent. I was lucky enough that he was my placement student on September the 11th, 2001. His presence in my team protected me, I believe, from the American rhetoric about what was going on in response, in their ridiculous response to those attacks. Isolation fosters suspicion and enmity and grave risk to the world in these perilous economic and climactic times. We must resist any and all actions that increase moves away from equality, justice, and civil liberties before it's too late. Trade unions, of course, and UCU in particular, have a valuable role to play in this. One last thing about me. The past four generations of my family, including me, have emigrated. We're now spread out over five countries. My siblings and I live in three different countries, none of us in the country we were born in. The oldest, in the next generation, my 16-year-old niece, wants to move as well. I want to live in a world where this continues to be possible, where culture, understanding, and knowledge are global, not capitalism, exploitation, hatred, and suspicion. If this happens, why bother reacting to the terrorists anymore? They've already won. They've destroyed what's best about the rest of the world. What have we left to fight against if we give up our own belief system? I just want to end with a quote from William Saroyan's play, The Time of Your Life, written in response to the last major global depression on the eve of World War II, attempting to see a way through. Be the inferior of no man, nor of any man be superior. Remember that every man is a variation of yourself. How can we continue to learn that in the UK these days if we do not resist any and all attempts to teach us otherwise? Thank you.
Thank you, Dorothy.